This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Well, people are always asking us what to do, where to go, what should they do in theater. And we love theater and we celebrate it. I always loved Funny Girl and I love it still. And every time you see a show, even if you've seen it before, it's a brand new experience. So that's how you have to come to it. Just let it take over. And that's what happened when I went to see Funny Girl. And you're going to love it. And one of the great scenes is a tap dancing scene. And Jared Grimes, who plays Eddie Ryan in Funny Girl, brings the house down. Now, I've seen Jared work before, but I'm telling you, there was something magical about that. So, Jared, congratulations on everything. So happy to have you with us today. And I'm
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You know, eight shows is a lot, but it's worth every exhaustion moment.
For sure.
So let's start really at the beginning. You were just a kid when your mother had the good sense to teach you how to tap, right? 3 years old?
Yeah, 3 years old. She was always working on dance routines downstairs, and I would wake up early in the morning and I would see her and her friends down there working on those routines. And I just slowly but surely, you know, I started to pick up some of the steps. I wanted to dance with them and, you know, I wanted to be like my mom. So tap wasn't even her first love. It was actually the one she feared the most out of all the genres. But for some reason, I latched on to that one.
Well, I think that, and that's a great kid thing, because not only is it fun to do, but it makes noise. And
oh, my gosh. It makes noise and it's loud and, you know, you can bang and all day long. As soon as you wake up, even when you're asleep, you can still tap dance. So,
now,
all for that type of energetic, you know.
Right. And Jared, was your mom a professional dancer?
Yeah, she was, on and off. She had a dance company in Jamaica, Queens called Sunshine Dance Company, and they used to perform and tour around the New York area for the most part. And that's pretty much, you know, the extent of her professional career was, you know,
teaching,
bootstrapping her own dance program and teaching workshops around and preparing young and black kids for the industry. And that's what her passion was. And she's a school teacher, too. So her passion was more about teaching dance,
right,
and teaching academics.
And then when the family moved to North Carolina, it's funny because you moved. I knew High Point because I knew people in the furniture business. And that was a big deal there.
Mm-hmm. Furniture market, High Point. I don't know why my parents picked High Point, but I think at the time I was 6 years old, I think their mode of thinking was it was this new upstart town that had like a lot of potential, which today High Point is huge.
Right.
But when we moved there, like in the early 90s, it was smaller. I mean, I remember it was all forest. It was all woods. There were really not too many businesses. The city was pretty small. And then, you know, I look up now and it's almost the same size and has the same popularity and draw as Charlotte or Raleigh, North Carolina. So it's definitely gotten bigger, and my parents were right. And the dance scene was really big there, too, in terms of dance schools. There were a lot of dance schools, and I think that's what attracted my parents to the area because they knew I could kind of continue dancing and growing in the arts.
Well, and you did. You became part of a company. You started touring. But how did you get, like, you toured at one point with Mariah Carey. How does something like that happen when you're so young?
Oh, man, I was a senior in college. And, yeah, I just went. I had a math class coming up, and, you know, my dance agent called me, and they were like, hey, Mariah Carey's doing an audition for her press tour, the first leg of her Emancipation of Mimi tour. And they were like, do you have time to run over there real quick? And I'm in between classes. So I'm like, man, should I skip math today, or should I go to for this audition, you know, usually when you go to auditions like that, there might be like 100, 200, you know, dancers vying for, you know, maybe five slots.
Of course.
In this particular case, there were maybe a little bit under 100, and they were all buying, we were all buying for one slot because she had already hired dancers from L.A. So they were in New York, and they were looking for one more dancer. And I was like, wow. So, I mean, you know, the odds of this are kind of, you know, low, but the choreographer that was on the project, he was the choreographer, Marty Kudelka, who's Justin Timberlake's go-to choreographer. He was somebody that I just at least wanted to learn from. So I was like, you know, at the worst, you know, I could go to the audition and at least have a free class from this choreographer just to get the experience. And I ended up getting the job, and we started rehearsals literally right after the audition. So I couldn't even make it to math class. So I called my teacher and I told them why, and they were like, oh yeah, by all means. Yeah. That's, you know, at this point in time, that's way better than these complex equations. So, and so I found myself on tour with one of the legends in pop music.
Without question. I'm talking to Jared Grinds, and Jared does it all. He sings, he dances, he acts. He's a great choreographer. He's one of the stars of Funny Girl. And if you've just joined us, we were talking about how it was almost a fluke. He auditioned for Mariah Carey, and is, you know, anything about theater and showbiz, everyone wants to do that if they dance or sing, and yet you got it. So what happened when you came back after that tour?
You know what? I just had a new perspective and outlook on, you know, what the business was. Being a backup dancer, that was my first backup dancing job, actually. So I was just like, wow, like, you know, I got to see how Mariah Carey operated in rehearsals. I got to see how, you know, the band operated on tour and how her backup singers operated on tour. And that was like my first close-up glimpse to show business instead of on a professional level. And I remember thinking, man, if I could be the leader of my own universe and that right, kind of like, you know, Mariah Carey, maybe more in a Gregory Hines type of way or in a Sammy uh-huh. Davis Jr. kind of way, you know, that would be awesome, because I just, the rush that I got from just being on stage, and I wasn't even the focal point, you know, I was just like, oh man, that's the kind of rush that I live for. And it's a different type of rush. Like, you know, I've been performing my entire life, but, you know, to be on, you know, MTV and perform on BET and, you know, to perform on Good Morning America and stuff like that, that was a different type of commercial aesthetic than what I was used to. You know, everything else is, you know, up until that point was a little bit more, you know, regional theater or, you know, small kind of commercials, you know, the building blocks to becoming, you know, building your career. And that was kind of like the pinnacle at that point. I was just like, oh man, I want this. Like, I want stuff like this. I want to be able to reach the masses in the way that Mariah Carey reached the masses when we were on tour. And, you know, although it's Mariah Carey, that's a high bar to jump to so soon, you know, in my career. But I instantly
jumped.
Never forgot what that felt like, and I wanted it. So I just kind of worked hard towards, you know, that standard, you know, of entertainment in my own way. And that's when doors started opening. I started backup dancing for more artists after that. I think right after that, I was dancing with Busta Rhymes, Salt and Pepper, the artist Common. You know, everything kind of broke open for me in terms of backup dancing. And I got to see how all these artists operated. And I was just like, yeah, like, I get it. I understand. From seeing them, you know, from being backstage with Usher, and, you know, being in a room with Justin Timberlake and having a conversation with, you know, guys like John Legend and, you know, Justin.
Oh my gosh, it's
big time.
And
Usher, to a certain degree, I was just like, man, I was like, I want to be like them, you know, for my generation. But in a Sammy Davis Jr., Fred Astaire, you know, Gregory Hines kind of way. So I really, those moments were important for me early on, because I felt like I was supposed to be in that room with those guys.
And it happened. I'm talking to Jared Grinds, who plays Eddie Ryan in Funny Girl. And we're going to let you hear much more, because here you get a big break. You go on tour. You start meeting the major players. So at what point, you know, obviously it's a tough business to make a living in. And I know you did a lot of work you were tapping away in the subways in New York. Was that after the tour? When did that part start happening?
Before I got to college. So I was still in high school in the late 90s. I would say like 99, maybe 98. And I would come back and forth, you know, from North Carolina to New York to just study, take classes with the choreographer of my tap moment in Funny Girl, the Ayodele Cassell. I would drive back and forth to take classes with teachers like her. She was one of my first mentors. Mm. And I made friends from doing that. And the friends that I made, they just happened to perform in the subways. Just for money and just for the sheer love of the craft and just the closeness that it brings you to, you know, a New York audience. And so, when I was in high school, I used to drive up, take classes, and then in between classes and on downtime, I used to go with the guys and go under the subway and perform. our favorite, yeah, I would tap. I mean, they would have their buckets and they would be bucket drumming, and I would pull out a board, and me and, you know, the likes of Dewey Fleming and another great tap dancer, friends of ours, we go out there and we perform for hours on end just because we enjoyed it, and we were pushing the craft and we were growing, we were evolving in the art form. And then when I got here college, you know, throughout the 2000s, I think I performed all the way from, you know, 2001 all the way to like maybe 2003.
Wow. And you made money
in the subways. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't even the main goal. The main goal was to really just push yourself.
Exactly.
I mean, there's something about, you know, performing in a subway or performing on a sidewalk for New York that it's an experience, you know, that relates to no other in my entire life. It's just so raw. It's surrender completely to, you know, the energy of New York City, the people right at you. Unlike being on the stage, because they're a little bit further away from you, but they're like, they form a circle right around you, and they connect to you in a different way. And it was the best training ground for me to prepare for the stage, because if you're used to trying to catch someone's attention in New York City with a pair of tap shoes as they're walking by, typically late for an appointment already, and if you can get that person to stop and take you in a little bit, then, you know, that's an amazing, you know, that's an amazing accomplishment.
No, without
New York,
question.
Most people don't have time for you. So that's what that was all about. The stamina, it was the passion, it was the urge to really, really get people to want to connect with you, relate with you, love with you. All the things that human beings can be with one another, that's the most positive aspects about them. If you could get somebody to share that with you in that moment that you're on that board, you know, on the sidewalk or in the subway, that's what it was all about. Sometimes you close your eyes and you open them and there's, you know, over 100 people there. And sometimes you close your eyes and open them and there's just one, you know, little girl standing there, you know, dancing with you. And that's what it's all about, you know.
But you also had this incredible ambition and burning. And even when there were moments of disappointment, you didn't give up. And there, you know, I have actors in the family and people in that industry, and so many of their friends would say, if I don't get it by the time I'm 30 or 35, I'm done. You know, how much longer can I do this? But you can't really think like that, right? Because especially in your area too, where there are so many dancers and so many people who want what you want.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, everybody has a plan B and a plan C for certain things like that. I had always told myself that, you know, once I really matured in the art form, and there's no way you can ever fully mature in music. Your music is infinite. But I think when I really started to gain my bearings and understand just what type of instrument I was working with, uh-huh. I think that's when a lot of things changed for me. I told myself, I was like, look, you know, if I don't achieve the goals that I'm supposed that I want to achieve, then that really doesn't matter. I think first and foremost, what I really made my mission statement as I started to gain my bearings in the art form and all the things that I was passionate about, is I was like, you know, it should be about something bigger. It should be about giving. You know, it shouldn't be about what I want. It should be about, you know, giving people the history of a lot of Black performers entrepreneurs that came before me that sacrificed a lot in order for me to even have conversations like this right now, who paved the way for me to even be, you know, nominated or to be on a Broadway stage or to even dance with Mariah Carey. I was like, it should be about them. I want to give people a piece of their legacy, of their spirit, of their fight, their struggle. And I completely removed myself from the equation at that point. And, you know, I made it about giving, you know, giving the history, giving the knowledge, giving, you know, life to those performers who a lot of people may not know about and a lot of history mm-hmm. books did not, you know, write about. It was all about giving, and I made that my mission statement. And it's funny because as soon as I changed my mindset to that, that's when a lot more doors
started
to open up. And I was just like, wow, if I would have, you know, if I would have known that a little bit earlier, not that it's some trick to getting doors open, but, you know, I made it about something bigger than, you know, how hard I work or bigger than being the best, you know, triple threat performer ever, or, you know, bigger than, you know, trying to be like my idols. I just made it about, you know, preserving the legacy. You know, that's when, you know, the door started opening up for me. And that's when, you know, there was no time mark on anything that I did. You know, I was satisfied if I just made my mission statement that till the day I was no more. You know, there was no time scale at that point. I was content and I was happy with,
you were gonna do it.
With really making things about them.
But so where did Funny Girl come in? Now, you've been working now, and, you know, people know you, and you're doing more and more. But did you read about it, hear about it? Did your agent call you and say, hey, there's a good role in this for you?
At the time, I was filming Manifest on Netflix. Uh-huh. We're in our fourth season, so everything was kind of focused in on that job at hand. And, I get auditions and shelf tapes and stuff like that, you know, intermittently throughout the weeks and stuff like that. And, you know, my agents had shown me, you know, Funny Girl. And I was like, oh, cool. I was like, I know the movie to a certain extent. I know the characters. I know the story. And, you know, usually when something comes across my desk, since I've been doing so much choreography, I was like, oh, is this, you know, for choreography or
is it?
They were like, no, it's, they were like, it's for
an actor.
It's for an actor that plays the choreographer in the show. And that's when I was like, oh, come on. And I was like, that's actually, you know, even more perfect. Because I love to, you know, be that dual threat type of performer, which, you know, I'm working behind the table on some projects, choreographing or, you know, dabbling and directing and then also performing. Like, I always want to be that person that's the jack of all trades when it comes to everything behind the table and in front of the table or behind the camera and in front of the camera. And I was like, okay, Eddie Ryan. I was like, okay, cool. I was like, I'm pretty sure in the version that I remember, Eddie Ryan was not black. And they were like, yeah, they're open to different ethnicities for the. And I was like, oh man, this could be a great opportunity for, you know, the mission statement that I just spoke about previously. And I was like, it's, you know, early 1800s, a guy that's playing a choreographer that's a best friend and ride or die to a young Jewish rising star. I was like, this is an amazing story, and there's a lot of layers that I could bring to this character that, you know, may have never been done before.
Right, and they made the character
comedy.
The character became more important. Harvey Firestone, you know, rewrote it and put a lot into it. So there was
he told
part.
Me I was a real person. Yeah, he told me I was a real person. That's when my heart opened up and I realized that, you know, we were all on the same page in terms of, you know, exactly what Eddie would mean to the universe of our version of Funny Girl. And, you know, sadly, I think in the original, the part was a smaller part. And this time, you know, we were in the room, I was trying things, and I was talking about all the things that I was just talking about, my mission statement and, you know, immersing myself in Bojangles Robinson and John Bubbles and Bill Bailey and Baby Lawrence and the Nichols Brothers and, you know, all those great performers that I watched growing up. And I was, you know, I was crafting Eddie, you know, spirit of those guys. And, you know, every day was, you know, was a challenge in terms of how to bring that to the story without compromising the, you know, the arc of the entire story. And, you know, one day when I really felt good about some of the choices that I made, Harvey pulled me to the side and he was like, that's it. He was like, Eddie is a real person. And as soon as he said that, you know, they started adding some more lines and stuff like that, and arcing him out just a little bit more in the second half and in the first half, actually. And we found, you know, our version of Eddie, the African-American Eddie. I'm super proud of the way I pay homage on stage every night to, like I said, all those who paved the way.
No, it's exciting. Was your family there for opening night?
They were not. My mom has come. My parents aren't really big on opening nights. They like to come when, you know,
when it's, you know, when established,
the show is well-oiled and everything. Now, even though by the time you get to an opening night, it is. But, you know, my parents, they always sneak in and they kind of surprise me. And they pull that, hey, I'm in town. Let me come see the show. And I'm like, oh, for sure. So my mom came over Mother's Day and she saw the original.
Yeah.
And she was just super excited. She had no idea that, you know, the Eddie character would kind of
be so,
you know,
big.
It would hit audiences in the way that, you know, we've been fortunate enough to do with our version of the show. And she thought it was really respectful and dignified, and it made her proud. You know, on Mother's Day, that was one of the biggest gifts I could give
great.
Her.
It sounds great. And when she saw her kid, you, do that solo tap routine, she thought it was really worth pushing that 3-year-old to learn to dance.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's just joy. She sees that smile. She's seen that smile since day one. So she knows when when I get in the time machine and I go back and I just, you know, I just bask in the joy of all those performers that came before me.
Well, you do a great job. We love seeing you and the whole cast. Funny girl. And take yourself over. Go get a ticket. It's going to make you feel happy. We have a crazy world. And it's just amazing to be able to sit in the theater and let magic occur and take your mind off all the bad things and just celebrate all the good things. Congratulations, Jared. I look forward to your continued success, and we'll talk again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me today.
Anytime. I'm Joan Hamburg with Jared Grimes as Eddie Ryan in Funny Girl, and much more ahead here on WABC.